Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. Welcome to Bookworm. This is going to be the most unusual show I've ever done. I have with me as my guest, Dennis Scheck. He is my, well, double. I feel as if Nabokov, a pale fire, arranged this program, and Tweedledum and Tweedledee have been brought together. He does public television and public radio in Germany. He has, in addition, been an editor, a translator, a critic, and a publisher. And he is highly appreciated as a literary critic in Germany and is similarly polarizing with his eloquence.
And don't forget to mention, Michael, that both of us are extremely good looking.
Yes, yes, we are very good looking. well, no one has ever said that before, I must tell you. But thank you very much.
That was worth the trip.
It takes an eye from abroad. But the first thing I wanted to do was to ask you. I made a decision years ago when I took on this show that because I'm a host, my guest is a guest, and that the rules of hospitality obtain between us, and that I therefore choose writers whose work I respect, and I treat them respectfully, largely because in America we have a daily critic with the New York Times who sometimes takes out a hammer and pounds, especially novelists, into little pieces. And this has become something of a sport. I consider it to be an ugly sport. And I've since even said, I don't care about my opinion. My opinion is the least interesting thing about a book. Let's talk about the book. What is it like for you? What are your decisions in this regard?
That's a very interesting question, Michael. Of course, the format of an interview is always affirmative. So if you decide to invite a novelist, a writer, to your show, that means you have to be, at least on a broader view, in favor of the novelist, of the book that he has actually written. Otherwise, you will have a confrontative interview which somehow goes against the grain of the hospitality that you have as a host. That is absolutely true. But in my eyes, a literary critic would be absolutely weaponless or would become tame, teethless, so to speak, if he would not use occasionally the weapon of a bad review. Of course, I want to be of use for the novels that I think are the future of novel writing, but on the other side, the other side of the coin is, of course, I want to speak my mind about books that I consider trash. And as we are living in a trash society, a lot of the books that I see are horrible. And I would hate to give this false view of reality that all of the writers I'm talking to are great writers when all of the books I see in the bookstores are shabby pieces of shoddy writing. So we have to there has to be a balance. You have to have the bad reviews, you have to the text that might hurt, but I'm not writing for the novelists, of course, I'm writing for the reader.
Yes. Well, fascinating to me. I'll tell you why. Because you want to present reality, as you say, but I think we have too much reality. I want to present irreality, a world in which the most interesting books are available for our discussion, and that week after week, I will find the book that is worth talking about that week, and that the shoddiness, the trash, that is for reality. Let the people who live and grovel in reality, let them read those books. We don't have to.
That reminds me of the literature I was so much in love with in my youth, in my childhood, science fiction, horror, fantasy literature, people that claimed that reality, the mundane world, is only the place for those who are not strong enough for the world of science fiction or whatever. Now, I think, you know, I want to have a place in the real world. I don't want to be, as a literary critic, a colleague of the unicorn or the Sphinx or something like that. I want to be to come out of the ivory tower. I want to have a place firmly in reality and say fiction is my reality, and there are perspectives on life that you can only get by reading great literature, and I want to see them put into action in the political space, in the social space. I want to say, no, also this book is on the bestseller list. This should never have been published. It's a sad crime against the trees that this book has even been printed.
You know, it's very interesting because I agree with you. I agree with you, and yet I feel that what Marion Moore says when she edited down her poems, that her changes were silent corrections and that they were not mistakes. This is something that Donald Barthelme said, and he attributed it to Dr. Johnson. He said that the critic's job is to praise and to surround the remainder with a well-thought-out silence.
I agree in so far that silence is the most dangerous weapon that a literary critic possesses.
And how much silence do you feel you use? You know, what is the percentage of silence to excrescence?
Let's put it that way. Nobody can force a reviewer to actually write a review about a certain book. For my television show in Germany, which is called Hot off the Press, Druckfrisch, I did a deal with the editors who gave me the chance to be on German television, because they had plans that more or less thought the show to be something like a talk show, where the most famous of people who are also writing books, namely politicians, sports stars, and so on, would be interviewed. And I said, I refused to do that. I wanted to talk about the books I really care about. But I remembered a very good idea that Gore Vidal, the American novelist and essayist, had in the 60s, when he wrote that famous essay after reading the books on the New York Times bestseller list, and he took the pulse of the nation, of the country, by doing that. And like all good ideas, of course, I thought I could plagiarize that. I adapted the idea of Gore Vidal by saying, okay, can we do that in a 5-minute version? Can I talk about the 10 bestsellers on the fiction list 1 month and the nonfiction list the other month in Germany within 5 minutes? Just giving a thumbs up, thumbs down, Siskel and Ebert kind of thing, with one argument, whether I like the book or not. And that was actually what made the show a success, probably in Germany, that a lot of people came to associate me with, this is the guy who actually reads the books on the bestseller list, which is a horrible experience, let me tell you.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Dennis Scheck about literature and literary criticism in both our countries, the United States and in Germany. Now, what about my dear recent friend, Dennis Scheck, our sense that perhaps in the modern novel, it's by reading the truly terrible books that the really good writers acquire their satirical sense and their ability to aim well thought out ammunition?
Well, that's how the novel started. When we go back to Cervantes with the Don Quixote, that's his way of making fun of the works of his colleague. Basically, it's a satirical novel about people who take books too seriously. It's a satirical novel about people who write shoddy works. So that is really ingrained in the very history of the novel. What I'm really very interested in, if one takes one step back and looks at the books that we have all read during the last 20 or 30 years, is what do those novels tell us about our societies? And what I have found for me as a kind of a measure, if you want to say that, I want not books that reaffirm my observations about life, about what I already know, but I want a book that grabs me by my collar and gives me a kind of a fist in the face or something like that, and turns my attention in a direction that I have not looked yet, like The Pale King by David Foster Wallace, the great late American authors that I think we both like.
We both
love. You know, who would have thought the rich interior life of the IRS in Peoria, of the employees there. And, you know, when I first got the glimpse of this novel, the fragment of the novel, one has to say, this is a guy writing about IRS employees. Can there be a more boring job in the world than doing that? You don't want to read a novel about that, but then you start and you say, yes, this is exactly what I needed. I've never thought these thoughts. I've never gone along these trails. That's why I want to enhance my reality by fiction.
Now, in America, Bellow, Gore Vidal, Thomas Pynchon, David Foster Wallace, have all been on the bestseller list at one time or another. Do you root for books to appear there? Are you disappointed when they fail to?
Of course. The writers you have named, they gave me my belief that you can actually change the world by writing novels, for example, by giving a portrayal of your contemporary society, that there was such a thing. That the non-boring, non-ivory tower authors could reach a mass audience in the United States and abroad as well. That was what attracted me so much to American fiction in the 70s and 80s in the first hand. And I met most of the writers then. I still have a weakness for Kurt Vonnegut Jr., for example.
Me too.
Since his very German novel, Schlachthof 5, Slaughterhouse 5, of course. And you kind of upgraded from there to the universe of the complex Bellow novels or the Don DeLillo books. We can't forget him in that context. And you feel, yes, this is what the amazing bloom of contemporary American fiction constitutes, and the Philip Roth novels too.
Well, may I offer a similar compliment to German literature?
Please go ahead. Make my day.
So what I did, I went back to Poe. And then I read that thing that Poe famously said, my horror is of the soul and not of Germany. So I said, well, what is Poe talking about? And I went to read German horror. Mm-hmm. And I found that if you really want to scare yourself, go read the classic German horror. It really is of the soul. He's talking, among others, about E.T.A. Hoffmann and that story, The Sandman, that Freud finds the origin of what he defines as the uncanny, and a book called The Magic Elixir. And recently we've had a retranslation of a book called The Black Spider. Truly, I've never met anything as disturbed and thrilling as these books, because what are they? They're Märchen. What are Märchen? Literary fairy tales. That is to say, they're drawn from the folk motifs, but art has been applied. Art and insanity. Because what do they say? Are you ready for this? I love this so much. I think it's the German literary critic and philosopher Schiller, mm-hmm. who says that really in this horror world, the essence of it is dizziness, whirling so you don't know reality from unreality, truth from fiction, madness from sanity. In other words, he says, at the essence of horror is Hamlet.
Well, this is well put by my Swabian countryman Friedrich Schiller. But to come back to E.T.A. Hoffmann, he famously said, well, in one of his stories, here I'm only a poor scribe. But in Atlantis, I have my own estate. And this kind of double life is, of course, a metaphor, the romantic poets that you mentioned, of course, of a metaphor for the sheer act of reading. Whatever we are here on this planet Earth, we are able to lead 1,000 lives and only have to suffer one death as long as we read.
Yes, yes. And isn't that beautiful? I mean, isn't that amazing.
It sure beats the Jekyll and Hyde existences.
It seems to me that, you see, people often talk about romantic writing, romantic poetry, but they don't understand that the German romantic writing was suffused with complicated comic irony that was so peculiar and so brilliant that we've barely even begun. Some of the theorists write essays about German romantic irony, and it's, of course, where we get Kafka from.
That is true, and you have to understand that it was a rebellious cause, one has to say. It was a counter-movement to the German classical movement, to writers like Goethe and Schiller in an earlier phase that were put on a kind of a pedestal, and life was coming back to the arts, the German arts, with the Romantic movement, luckily.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Dennis Scheck about literature and literary criticism in both our countries, United States and in Germany. We're thought to be doubles of a sort. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Dennis Scheck, host of Hot Off the Press, a literary program of public radio television in Germany, and literary editor at German Public Radio. And basically, he's the German Michael Silverblatt. I'm the American Dennis Scheck, if only. An inferior Dennis Scheck is what I am.
I'm sure you're doing a better job.
Oh, you are too kind. I think that certain kinds of sensibility are true of different literatures and different races, and that what you found in America was a certain kind of cavalier cruelty during the 1960s in Catch-22, say, in many of the books. And we, over in America, compare these books, say, with The Tin Drum. But I don't find The Tin Drum cavalier at all. I think it is an attempt to locate, you know, the soul of the innocent. And I think that we really look across the ocean at one another's literature through very different eyes. What do you think?
Well, of course, the canvas of American fiction has always been so vast that I hate to generalize about it, because at the same time where you have a writer like Joseph Heller working on Catch-22, you have other writers going in totally different directions, much more experimental. My favorite books by Joseph Heller are the books where he describes not the horror of the Second World War, but the horror of being an employee at an American company.
Yes.
Something Happened.
Something Happened.
That's the great novel of Heller, in my eyes.
Yeah. Not just a great novel of Heller, but a great novel.
We can agree on that, I think.
Yes.
But yes, there are, of course, there are different traditions and there are different artistic sensibilities and perceptions. To many people all over the world, with very good reason, Germany is the home of horror. In a twofold meaning, one could say, first of all, with the Romantic movement that we've talked about, on the second hand, of course, as the home of the Holocaust, if you want to say that, with the Nazis. And The Tin Drum of Günter Grass is, of course, a novel that would be totally ununderstandable if you don't see it as a reaction to the reign of terror, to the Nazi reign during the time of what was called the Third Reich. We have to add one thing, unless furious reactions will probably reach us. When we talk about German literature, we do not talk about German literature in the sense of the boundaries of Germany, but we talk about all literature that is produced in Austria, in Switzerland, in Luxembourg, in the German language, for example. So it has nothing to do only with the geography. Otherwise, we would always have to say there's great Austrian writers, there are great Swiss writers, there are great German writers working in the German language.
I think the same thing is true in America, that we have to include not just Canadian writing, but also writing often in Spanish that comes from South America. And that these are the writings of a hemisphere mm-hmm. that are responding to social conditions that we all share. And that one of the reasons that so many young American writers and readers are astounded by Roberto Bolaño is that he places in his novels what it feels like to be young today, what it feels like to want to be a poet. Does a poet have to be taking drugs all the time? Should a poet be misbehaving on a regular basis? And, you know, you read Bolaño and you think to yourself, this man has inhabited my journal.
I don't know what it means to be young today, but I know that Roberto Bolaño is certainly one of the great writers. The amazing thing about it for me is that the great unsung heroes of the literary life today are really the translators. We have to put much more importance in the art of translation, and there is a certain parochialism about American contemporary fiction that I find very bothering, and that has something to do with that there is just not this great translation culture in the States that many European countries have developed, had to develop because the borders were so close. The amazing thing is how much of this business is really the international intellectual transfer of literature, one has to say, is really based in the hands of, let's say, 200 people. This is really sometimes a state of affairs that you think it's like at the time of the 18th century.
My dear friend Scheck, I would say fewer than 200.
I'm not so pessimistic.
Yeah. You know, we are mostly living in the slowly developing understanding that publishing will not be the business we have known.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more optimistic there. Maybe I would not call my show bookworm, but more like a book dragon or something like that.
Oh, yes, I understand. I understand. Yes, I am the mouse and you are the cat. Oh. And I accept the fact that I do feel, in my love for literature, I feel like I've been backed into a corner.
Really?
That there, yes.
Is the empire of Fantasia getting smaller and smaller each day?
I do think so. I do in America, yes. In American universities, the reading of literature has been replaced by the reading of theory and pseudo-philosophy. And many, many people have no sense of the background of American literature. The one thing that we once believed, that there would be, could still be a great American novel, all this, it's a part of the past.
Michael, I'm sorry, I have to say I don't think so. We have both witnessed bookstores being opened at midnight, queues being formed by extremely young people trying to get the next Harry Potter in their hands, a power that was considered lost to the Gutenberg medium book that only the Hollywood blockbuster would have. And to see the reemergence of the medium book during our lifetime, let's get some hope out of that.
If you want to, you can. It's not a good book. The celebration of... You see, now you've turned the corner because you were complaining about Drek. This is Drek. And I'm not alone in saying it. Harold Bloom says it. Everyone who has read a fairy tale or knows a great, great children's book knows that this is a popular work of great, great. It's great that works are popular. If you feel that the sales figures represent the optimism of literature, good for you.
No, I don't feel that, but I know that Harry Potter in one of the novels has to write with his own blood a lesson, I must not tell lies. And this, for me, is a metaphor for the job of the literary critic. And I am sitting in your studio. I enjoyed Harry Potter, I have to say. It's not an example, in my opinion, of the track on the bestseller list. But still, I think those Harry Potter readers, some of them might evolve one of those days.
Oh.
Some of them.
Yes, yes. Yes, I am hopeful about readers. I'm not hopeful about the publishing business. I'm hopeful that shows like yours, like mine, and our way of getting enraged, as I just did, make for the listener a sense of, this is something. Listen to these two men.
Who get enraged about literature? That's because literature is important.
It's important. And we got enraged without being less friends.
Certainly not.
Exactly. And we are capable of talking at a pitch and then subsiding. See, restraint and passion and fury, all the things that literature offers.
Yes, Michael, but could you put down that gun that you are pointing at me?
I've been talking with Dennis Scheck, respected literary critic for German television and radio. Thank you for joining me. I'll put the gun down.
Thanks.
I want to acknowledge that this meeting is on the occasion of the sponsorship of the Villa Aurora, which is a writing colony that was started in the home of Leon Furstwanger. It exists still. It was a place where Thomas Mann and Heinrich Mann and Furstwanger and Bertolt Brecht, probably Schoenberg, joined of an evening of the impressive German exile community in Los Angeles.
And today it's some kind of cultural embassy, if one wants to say that, from Germany in L.A.
Yes. And because Furstwanger wrote screenplays among the group, he made the real money, and he was able to endow his Villa Aurora to be a visiting place for writers and artists internationally. And we are grateful to them. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. Yeah.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to Robert Dewhurst. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Jonathan Blum is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.